Good morning. My name is Doug Dorn. I'm a member of the Green Sanctuary Task Force. Our mission here at the Fellowship is to help us align our values in our actions towards environmental justice. So, how have we done that? Our team has provided classes that allow you to think deeper about your beliefs and actions. The Dove class that we hosted last year allowed participants to better understand their eating habits and the impacts they have on the environment. The Our Place in the Web of Life class allowed participants to understand how local actions have far-reaching impacts on people and the environment. We have encouraged bike riding at the Fellowship through Bike to Church Sundays and hosting a team on the National Bike Challenge. We've scheduled a composting workshop during the plant sale on May 13th to teach you how to reduce your waste stream. Our social outreach committee has collaborated with local environmental groups to raise awareness about environmental issues. This last Thursday, we hosted a Pop Earth event, which combines art, science, and the environment. We performed an energy audit of the facility, and we got a quote for solar panels on our roof. So we will continue to offer opportunities in the future, and we hope we'll see your name on the sign-up sheets. I'd like to bring one more point to your attention, and the UU Ministry for Earth and the UU Young Adults for Climate Justice are sponsoring a theme called Justice for Each Generation. This is a calling for solidarity with the 21 youth that have filed a constitutional lawsuit against the United States President and the federal government for failure to meaningfully address climate change. The name of the lawsuit is called Juliana versus the U.S. The theme of Justice for Each Generation evokes the concept of intergenerational equity. These written excerpts from environmental lawyer Edith Brown Weiss help provide a definition and a framework for intergenerational equity. Sustainability is possible only if we look at the Earth and its resources not only as an investment opportunity, but as a trust, passed to us by our ancestors, to be enjoyed and passed on to our descendants for their use. Such a planetary trust conveys to us both rights and responsibilities. Most importantly, it implies that future generations too have rights, although to be sure these rights have meaning only if we, the living, respect them, and if this respect transcends the differences among countries, religions, and cultures. In thinking about what this lawsuit means to us, Reverend Dr. Susan Ritchie wrote an Earth Day sermon in which I'll share some passages. The lawsuit of Juliana versus the United States argues that the federal government, by denying climate change and or failing to act on it by reducing carbon emissions, has deprived these young people of their constitutional right to freely pursue their lives and liberty. In short, the government is failing to be proactive about climate change, has denied their very futures. In contemplating these questions, it might be tempting to emphasize the great hope that these young people represent. They are indeed a remarkable people from whom we can and do take inspiration. And we should be cautious not to ask them to be the vehicle of our salvation. We do not want to turn them into prophets who, precisely because they suffer for our environmental sins, are also the only ones who can finally redeem us. We have our own work to do, as daunting and impossible as it sometimes feels. As UU ethicist Sharon Welch points out, many of us, especially if we are white and middle class, collapse under the weight of massive problems such as climate change that cannot be effectively project managed. We do best when we can divide up issues into steps that progress steadily and inexorably to a desired outcome. As a corrective to the paralysis of despair, she recommends the wisdom of African-American womenists who teach that even if it is not easy to imagine the completion of a goal, successful activists nonetheless put themselves wholeheartedly into the fray, stirring up the social context so that the new possibilities can emerge along the way. This advice is more than practical. It displays a spiritual and theological wisdom. If what we desire is to foster life, surely along the way we must ourselves manifest liveliness.
Good morning. My name is Heather Wesley, and I feel really honored to have been asked to speak today about what the earth means to me. I've been a practicing pagan for over 20 years. There are many ways to describe pagan beliefs, just as there is an array of beliefs, perspective, and focus for you use, this exists for pagans as well. For some pagans, it's about recreating pre-Christian religious practices. For some, it's about magic or the occult. And for some, like me, my primary focus is about finding the great spirit in nature. My personal journey has become particularly focused and enriched by studying Druidry. If you're not familiar with Druidry, you probably at least know the most famous Druid, Merlin, the great sage who instructed King Arthur. There are several organizations that teach Druidry, and if you are looking for a spiritual connection to the earth, I would highly recommend that you check them out. One that I am learning from is called the OBOD, that stands for the Order of Bards, Ovates, and Druids. The program is a series of self-paced written lessons with practical applications. From these lessons, I have become a gardener, a composter, a vegetarian, a friend to snakes and spiders. Trust me, that was the hardest one. A solo camper, and a tree hugger. The lessons have challenged me to interact differently with various aspects of nature. For example, when studying the element of earth, my husband Todd and I built our first garden box and started planting. We had not been gardeners before that. We now have numerous garden boxes, if you come by our house, and several dedicated now to native plants. We also joined a CSA so we could eat locally and support a farming community in Nina. One of the most profound lessons I had involved becoming friends with a tree. Now, to those of you who are already friends with trees, you know the amazing value of having a tree friend. They are never judgmental. They don't talk behind your back. They're generally available anytime you need them, although I find in winter they're kind of quiet. And they are incredibly wise. For those of you who find what I am saying quite odd, I would suggest that you give it a try. I can give you tips on that too. The picture on the screen is my best friend, Emma. She is a maple tree in our front yard and an important member of our family. I greet her every day when I come home, and I ask her to guard my home and family when I leave every morning. She does a good job. I would like to end today with a blessing from my Druid studies. It's called the Blessing of the Four Realms. The four realms are the mineral, such as your rocks and dirt in the core of our planet, the plant realm, our trees and flowers, the animal realm, those spiders and elephants, and the human realm. I recite this blessing every day as a way to remind me of the interdependent web and my responsibility to the earth. It ends with the word Awen, A-W-E-N, which loosely means blessings and inspiration. O Great Spirit, may the mineral realm of the earth be preserved and protected. May the plant realm of the earth be preserved and protected. May the animal realm of the earth be preserved and protected. May the human beings on earth gain wisdom and compassion. May peace prevail on earth. Awen.
Interdependence is a relationship. To me, this means those of us who are warriors for the earth need to trust. There's mutuality in our relationship with the earth in order to go on caring, to go on fighting. to accept we're imperfect in our actions toward the earth and that we are part of a human family system that hurts the earth beyond our individual control. At the same time, we need to pay attention to the gifts we receive from the earth in exchange for our love and care. For me, keeping my interdependent relationship with the earth a healthy one exemplifies in two ways: encountering the natural wonders of our world and gardening. I turned to two of my favorite writers for this reflection. Kathleen Dean Moore is an observer of the natural world and philosopher. Wendell Berry is a farmer and philosopher. Moore writes, "Here is what I believe, that the natural world, the stuff of our lives, the world we plod through, hardly hearing, the world we burn and poke and stuff and conquer and irradiate, that this world, not another world on another plane, is irreplaceable, astonishing, contingent, eternal and changing, beautiful and fearsome, beyond human understanding, worthy of reverence and awe, worthy of celebration and protection." If the good English word for this combination of qualities is sacred, then so be it. Even if we don't believe in God, we walk out the door on a sacred morning and lift our eyes to the sacred rain and are called to remember our sacred obligations of care and celebration. And what's more, if the natural world is sacred and sacred describes the natural world, if there are not two worlds but one, and it is magnificent and mysterious enough to shake us to the core, if this is so, then we are called to live our lives gladly. We are called to live lives of gratitude, joy, and caring, profoundly moved by the bare fact that we live in the time of the singing of birds. Wendell Berry, the farmer, said, "Burning the world to live in it is wrong. As wrong as to make war to get along and be at peace, to falsify the land by sciences of greed or by demand for food that's fast or cheap, to falsify the body's health and pleasure. Don't ask why. But why not play it cool? Why not survive by nature's laws that still keep us alive? Let us enlighten, then, our earthly burdens by going back to school, this time in gardens that burn no hotter than the summer day. By birth and growth, ripeness, death, and decay, by goods that bind us to all living things. Life of our life, the garden lives and sings. The wheel of life, delight, the fact of wonder, contemporary light, work, sweat, and hunger, bring food to table, food to cellar shelves. A creature of the surface like ourselves, the garden lives by the immortal wheel that turns in place year after year to heal it whole. Unlike our economic pyre that draws from ancient rock a fossil fire, an anti-life of radiance and fume that burns as power and remains as doom, the garden delves no deeper than its roots and lifts no higher than its leaves and fruits." And then I'll go back to Kathleen Dean Moore. "There is something infinitely healing in the repeated refrains of nature," Rachel Carson wrote. "The bottom may drop out of my life. What I trusted may fall away completely, leaving me astonished and shaken. But still, sticky leaves emerge from bud scales that curl off the tree as the sun crosses the sky. Darkness pools and drains away, and the curve of the new moon points to the place the sun will rise again. There is wild comfort in the cycles and the intersecting circles, the rotations and revolutions, the growing and ebbing of this beautiful and strangely trustworthy world. No measure of human grief can stop the world in its tracks. Earth rolls into sunlight and rolls away again. Continents glowing green and gold under the clouds. Trust this, and there will come a time when dogged, desperate trust in the world will break open into wonder. Wonder leads to gratitude. Gratitude opens onto peace.
Good morning. My name is Frank Vandehei. I come from the Oneida Reservation, not too far north of here. I really wasn't sure what I was going to speak about this morning. I didn't make a script. I didn't plan on it too much. I think I'd like to just reflect on some of the things that I've been through within this past year and a half. I went out to Standing Rock last year, and it was a pretty hard thing for me to see the suppression that was going on out there, and the people that were fighting, trying to keep clean water for their children. I never really seen anything like that before. I've heard of it. I've experienced things here, you know, with racism, suppression, and to actually see the amount of suppression that was going on was tough for me to witness. I mean, I seen people asked that had been shot with rubber bullets. Women, they were aiming at better places on women, and to have that kind of hate for something that was going to be so destructive to me was rough. I didn't understand it. You know, I could feel the hate. To me, I didn't try to focus on that too much. What I tried to focus on was the good energy, the love that there was 15,000 people there. It was the most beautiful place I'd ever been in my life. Nobody did anything for anybody but try to help out. All doing it for the same reason, because they wanted to have clean water for their children, not even for themselves, because when that pipeline leaks, and it's leaked 5 times since, it wasn't really them that was going to be affected, it was going to be their children and their children's children. When I left there, I needed to do something. Everybody was talking about divesting and pulling their money from the banks. That was a step, but I needed to do something more, and that was find a way on what can I do to make it better for my children and my children's children. And the thing that I focused on was green energy and living in harmony with not only our surroundings, but you know, the world. And in doing so, becoming more conscientious of who we are as a person. So I started developing a structure, you know, that utilizes some green energy, and kind of I dug it down into the ground and tried to not put foam in the ground and utilize some of the, it's called geothermal mass, which is good energy. It brings a lot of clean energy and lets you work with your spirit. I went up to Flint, Michigan, and I seen how detrimental those people in the way that they were living, and it was just sad to see that nobody really cared about them and what was going on. I mean, there was a lot of people that cared, but not enough to go up there and do anything about it. When I came back, I was like, I got to come back and I got to do something, you know. The water is the one thing that we share as a people. And anything that I can do here, you know, I might not be able to go up to Flint and save them because it's going to take more than what I can do. But what I can do is I can focus on protecting my water. And in a sense, I'm protecting the water that goes around the globe. I think if we all do the same, we can make an effort into protecting our earth. Sorry if I'm stumbling a little bit here. I don't really like public speaking, but there's a lot of things that we can do as people that we're not really doing right now. And we go out and we spray poisons on our lawn to keep dandelions down. We don't really think anything about flicking a cigarette butt out the window. We don't really care about buying bottled water and throwing the plastic bottles in the garbage. I think that it's going to take us making a conscious decision to change our way of thinking and teaching our children that the way that we were brought up isn't necessarily the right way. Wasn't as important then as it is now. But each generation, we can make that change in the way that we're thinking. Help them to guide their children. I'd like to encourage everybody to do that.